Hello and welcome to the Multiplanetary Society podcast, where we explore topics related to the space economy and the why and how of potentially becoming a multiplanetary species. I'm your host, Timothy Reuter. Today, we are pleased to have with us Matthew Galiuk, co-founder and CEO at Astroforge. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, Timothy. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start with what your company does and what you hope it will be doing in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, so Astroforge, in a short sentence, is an asteroid mining company. We're going after some of these near-Earth objects, refining them for rare earth metals, and then bringing that directly back to Earth to be sold on the commodities market. In 5 to 10 years, we hope to be having a consistent train of vehicles that are going out and mining asteroids for their resources.
Great, and I think one of the big questions is, what is the economics of this? You're taking a very interesting angle, because some of the other folks I talked to about space mining think about it in terms of space for space, doing things like, you know, creating things that can be used at fuel, you know, outside of the Earth's orbit. But you're really going, you know, space for Earth. So I'd love to hear how do you convince people that you can, you know, make more money than it costs to bring this back, because that's what it really feels has been missing in many ways to launch this industry.
So look, I love every company going after the in-space economy and trying to do things like you mentioned, refuel rockets, you know, mine the moon for helium-3. There's quite a few companies out there trying to do things like that, and I think that that's very much needed, and that'll push the space industry forward. But for me, that economy isn't currently in existence. There's not a huge market cap there for that economy, and there's probably going to be in a couple of years, but it's not there yet. We're taking a ton of technical risk as a company going after, obviously, something that's never been done before in human history. I didn't also want to take a risk from a company perspective on the profitability side, and that really comes down to the in-space economy. We know what the commodities market is on Earth. We know the market cap of specific metals and what they can bring. And so it's very easy to size out exactly what we think we can do per trip, how much we can bring back, and what it can be sold for. In fact, it makes that business case kind of very easy to tell the story of and what we think can close, because I can show you, you know, how much gold is traded per day, how much silver is traded per day, how much of the platinum group metals are traded per day. And that's what we're really focused on doing.
That's great. And, you know, so let's say you are successful in the sense that you were able to bring back more, you know, value to Earth than it costs to send it out. What do you think will be the effect on the sort of space economy writ large?
So I hope that if we can show this and we can make this happen, and we can show that it is a business case that closes, this opens the door for a ton of other companies to start up and take on even visions bigger than ours, right? Of going out and really making that in-space economy a reality. I think the problem we have today in the space market is that without the government, we're not profitable as companies. And that's something that we are hopeful to change. Don't know if we will, right? But something we are truly going after is, do we have a business case that closes without the support of the government? Not saying in any way we won't work with the government or we don't support our government in any way. But for me, it was really, let's have an economic focus that is focused just on the materials coming back and being sold.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I sort of feel like for low Earth orbit and Earth observation, we've started making that transition from government being the primary customer to government being a customer. But for anything beyond LEO, that still really is the government is the tent pole and in some cases the only customer. So if you can really prove that there's something that can be done outside of LEO that has a closed business case without government, that would really be transformational. How are you deciding what your targets are for where you're going to go and look for, I think platinum is what the press releases have said is the primary target?
Yeah, so we're primarily focused on the platinum group metals at this point in time. And that's just from some of the evidence we have from meteorites, from talking with experts in the field. That's what we think is in the highest concentrations on these objects we're going after. So selecting asteroids that we want to go after is obviously a huge challenge across the board. Like, I'm not going to lie to anybody on that one. It's very, very detailed in what we need to do. So we have a team of deep space trajectory analysts here that go after kind of all the known data on a ton of different groups of asteroids, and we study them for a given launch date. So we run giant processes of going through, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of viable candidates for each launch date, determining what is the lowest energy to get to, determining how much is known about those asteroids. You know, some of these things haven't been seen in 10, 15 years. We kind of got to kick those out or go get time on a large telescope to retract them. And use this all in a big trade matrix to understand what the most viable candidates are we are going after. Now, based on the trajectories of the asteroids, we can have some sense of what type of asteroid we think they are. But it's still, even at that point, it's very difficult to determine even what type of asteroid some of these things are going after them until we get there. And I think a lot of the models just don't have the data points that are needed to correlate them as we go forward. So for us, you know, when we do our first deep space mission, the real goal here is to verify that we can track the asteroid, that we can get to the asteroid as a whole, and that we can rendezvous with the asteroid. We need to make those proof points happen. You know, no commercial company has ever done that. To be fair, no commercial company has ever gone to deep space, right, as a mission profile. The only one that has is Elon's Tesla. So there's a lot of unknowns that we're trying to do and trying to take on. And the reality is, like, we don't have the support of a huge NASA budget to do it. So we need to do this in a creative way that makes sense and buy down that risk as we go forward.
And how long does it take to get to some of these candidate asteroids?
So that's a really wide question that we would answer. You know, the reality is that some of them take multiple years to get to, and that excludes them from our list. We are trying to have a total mission profile that lasts about 2 years. And so that really means we need to get to the asteroid in a matter of months. And that's what goes in when we study these asteroids is time of flight to get to there and rendezvous with them.
Right. And so, you know, tell us the story of how you came up with this idea, farmed the starting dream team and got started with this.
Yeah, I mean, space has been something that I've been a huge fan of for a long time. I have this picture from when I was in first grade of me, and it's actually drawing a rocket. And they say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it wasn't an astronaut. I wrote the guy that builds the rocket. Right? Like that's what my dream has always been to go do. And I got to do that at a company called Virgin Orbit. I got to go build rockets. I got to go see that go through. And then it really became, what can you do with this technology? How can you continue to kind of, you know, make that human nature of exploration go forward? And what this really came down to is, I'm a person that likes to take a lot of risk. I love to go to small startup companies, see what I could do, really have influence, really try to, you know, make something happen that's different. The only way to go do that in deep space is to go join JPL, which JPL has a lot of amazing scientists and a lot of amazing people. But it is not a startup, right? It is not a company where you're going to be able to use a credit card to go launch a mission or do some of these things. It's a very process-oriented government facility. For a lot of reasons, it's a very viable way to do it. The starting of this company was really about, how do we blend those two things together, right? How do we go after deep space? How do we go after these kind of exploration and kind of this dream that you can have of doing that, of exploring the universe, but at the same time, make it in a startup way? What could we do? I liken it very much to what Elon did to the launch industry in 2002. You know, nobody thought in 2002 anybody was going to make a commercial funded rocket. Like CityStates did this, right? Huge amounts of money went into the development. You know, companies like ULA would sell these for, you know, spend billions of dollars on development and sell them for $500 million and up. Like, it was just crazy scales. And Elon was able to come in and say, well, hold on, if we just take a little more risk and we do things a little differently, that price is much, much lower. We're thinking about this company the same way. And that's how we're going about it. And that's really where the vision and dream of this company comes from. Now, like always, you know, as a CEO, you can't do this all yourself. And I can't do this all myself. So while I was working at Bird, I met an engineer named Jose Akane. And when we did this, you know, I invited him to be kind of my co-founder and partner in crime as we went through this. And having somebody that has a very, very deep technical background, comes from SpaceX, so he spent a lot of time working on rockets just like I did at Virgin, really has allowed us to take this on from an engineering perspective. We both have engineering fields that are slightly different, in some ways overlap, but in a lot of ways don't. So it's been very helpful to push us forward on that, where we see the biggest technical risk, right, which is on the engineering side. So that's what we formed. And then from there, we've gone after just hiring top talent that's really on the mission of, how the hell do we get to deep space? How do we actually pull this off, right? How do you mine an asteroid? That's in a really simple question to ask and a really hard question to answer.
And I know you can't fully talk about all the things you're doing yet, but you know, to the degree you can, how would you answer your own question? How is a company, especially what, I mean, you know, you have a nice seed round for a SaaS company, but obviously what you're doing is much more expensive. So how do you get from where you are today to actually going out there and bringing something of value back?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'll touch on here is just the overall vision and how we're structuring the company, right? We are not going after building a space station-sized craft to go mine an asteroid with, you know, 1,000 people on it, like you might see in The Expanse or Armageddon or some crazy TV show, right? That's not what we're doing at all. We're building small vehicles that can take advantage of kind of the access to space that's been granted from launch companies and the continuously getting cheaper there. We're forming a lot of partnerships with a lot of top companies to help us even build these vehicles. We don't want to spend the resources there. Our company is really focused on what I would call the mining part of this operation, right? Mm-hmm. And the navigation part of this operation. And to do that, we're keeping the vehicles small, trying to get out there in a very small amount of time as well. So like I mentioned at the beginning, you know, our total mission profile, we'd like to be right around 2 years. And that just shows that we can execute on these milestones as we go forward in a much faster time frame. So I think the scale that we're talking about isn't as sexy as some of the other companies have done, right? I can't say we're going to mine like $100 quadrillion from an asteroid in one go. We're much more, I think, reasonable about it. We're going to bring back smaller amounts of metal. We're going to take higher risk. We're going to allow some of our vehicles, you know, we'll have a failure percentage that will happen, but keeping our vehicles small, low cost allows us to absorb that failure percentage and make sure that we can buy down these milestones and get forward. So we have a very, very fast plan that we are going after to make this happen. I would say there's aggressive and then there's kind of crazy. I think we fall in that crazy camp, but that's what you have to do as a startup. You know, our skill is speed and we want to make sure we're executing fast. You're right that we have raised quite a bit of money for what would be a consumer SaaS company. Like that would be great, right? Probably all the founders are like, awesome, we can grow to 60 people and whatever. That's not us at all. We're keeping the team very small. And as you know, a lot of this comes into capital expenditures. Buying rockets is not cheap. Buying spacecraft is not cheap, even when we go after the higher risk, you know, kind of lower flight heritage variants of this. This is still a very capital intensive problem. And me and Jose's real job as founders is to deploy that capital in a way that makes the most sense to get the technical milestones burnt down as quick as possible.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think one of the interesting things you've alluded to is what's available now. What do you expect to be available 2 years from now, just from the market generally? And what's the stuff that you have to develop yourself?
Yeah, so for us, we really have to develop how we mine an asteroid, right? Like that is not something I can go to another company and buy off the shelf because it's never been done before.
Yeah.
We also really have to develop how we go after actually getting to the asteroid. So yes, we could go contract JPL to do some of this stuff or work with universities to do this, but these trajectories are hard. These maps are hard. And kind of bringing everybody together to figure this out is very difficult. That all being said, it's amazing how well the scientific community has gravitated towards us when we go out and ask for help. Mm-hmm. And I just love to see people, you know, from top universities and other space agencies be like, wow, we're trying to do this mission. Like, we're going to help you guys in a way that we never thought would even happen. So it's kind of been awesome to see that. And as we continue to build our scientific advisors up, it's great to get a lot of those top scientists on our side trying to help us pull this off. Like I mentioned, me and Jose are engineers. We're not asteroid physicists, right? Like that's not our skill set. So we want to go leverage the best we can to do that. And so that's what we are really developing as a whole. There's a ton of launch companies right now out there that we can leverage. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of vehicle making, you know, or satellite bus companies out there that we can leverage. The price points might not be where we like it, and there's probably optimizations that can happen in the future there. But, you know, when you're this early at a company, it's worth it to not optimize yet. We want to make sure that we execute, that we burn down those milestones, and then we can worry about optimization. Once I've proved I can mine an asteroid and do that consistently, I don't think the biggest problem I'm going to have as a founder is money. Right. And at that point, we can worry about the optimization, getting the business, you know, very structured in that way. Even at the unoptimized price points, we will be very profitable per mission once this happens. So that's really where we're going from. Now, in the future, I think everybody in the space industry really, really wants to see Starship happen. Starship changes the game for us. And now a launch goes from a couple million bucks to hopefully a couple thousand bucks. Like, that obviously dramatically changes our balance sheet and what we can do, and even the size of vehicle we can go, the asteroids we can target, the amount of Delta V we can get. Like, it's awesome to think about the possibilities of Starship can get off the ground. So even though I have nothing to do with SpaceX and I'm just sitting on the sidelines, like, I'm very hopeful that rockets like Starship and hopefully other companies will follow on. You know, Relativity's doing Terran R. And you have a couple, you know, Blue is still doing New Glenn. Like, I hope these large vehicles take off.
Yeah. And to what degree is getting to and landing on an asteroids a solved problem? Because on the one hand, we've seen JAXA, the Japanese space agency, do it. But not a ton of folks have done it. So, you know, how much of the technical challenge lies in that part of it, aside from even can you extract something from the asteroid?
So a couple things here I'll say is we have absolutely technically done the challenge of landing on an asteroid. We've done the challenge of landing on a comet, an asteroid, bringing samples back. Like, we've done this as a humanity before, right? The challenge isn't technically at that point, it's at price point, right? And what can we do for a cheaper price point? And I think that's always been the challenge. Look, the reality is we built the Saturn V to get us to the moon in 1969. That's no way that could be a commercial venture. You could do it for low cost, right? That was 5% of the GDP. So really the challenge is, how do we do this in a way that makes sense and can be low cost? And that's really where a lot of that technical risk will incur is just, can we repeat what's already been done for this? Now, we also have been in touch with some of the third-party companies that helped OSIRIS-REx land and do its navigation. And these companies are very, very helpful. They're awesome to work with. And we're hopeful to leverage them and their technology as we go forward to make this happen for us, right? As you mentioned, we've done it. Let's make sure we're bringing that inboard to our company and using what we've already done and really taking the risk where we have it, which is extracting the regolith and refining it.
Yeah. And what was it like going through YC?
You know, YC is awesome. It was a really cool experience. It really introduces you to a whole class of people that you'd never think from my perspective I would ever be talking to. And other YC founders and people in the community are so helpful and so awesome as we went about this adventure. It was great to be able to cold email a ton of fellow YC companies, just say, hey, can we jump on the phone and talk and get your advice? And how willing they were to do it. Now, you know, YC more natively is focused on SaaS companies. And I think a lot of YC's advice in the general sense is focused on how you run a SaaS company. But the partners themselves are the ones that were very critical in making this company happen, give us the belief to do it. And, you know, sometimes you just need those people that have seen this 100 times before to kind of slap you in the face and say, like, what are you guys doing? Do this instead. Like, this is how you need to be thinking about it. And that was the critical advice that I think made us successful as we've gone forward.
And what are sort of investors for this kind of work like? I mean, most people are thinking about how can I get, you know, the fastest and highest return on my investment. My sense is that space is not the way to get the highest and fastest return on investment, but there are other things that motivate people who invest in the space, but maybe that's an incorrect, you know, perception. So when you try and pitch this, you know, who do you target it to and how do you find the folks who it resonates with to be different from maybe other folks?
You know, there's all different types of investors out there. You have some investors that are much lower risk. You have some investors that are higher risk. I think with something like an asteroid mining company, to pitch that, number one is we need to be able to really explain how we're going to do this technically. And that's first and foremost. Like, none of it matters unless you can prove to other people that you can pull it off. Second thing here is that I think we all know if you can make asteroid mining work, like, this is by default the largest company ever created. You're mining the universe, right? It's a little insane to even think about the scale you can pull this off at. And so for investors trying to return a fund or trying to look at their risk profile, this is a high risk play, but the upside here is just immense. And so I think that helps a lot on this. But really what it comes down to for us is we want investors that believe in the vision of what we're trying to do. We understand that this is definitely a dream and something that we are going to be the first people to ever attempt to do in a realistic way. Like I mentioned, we're going to be the first people to do a commercial deep space mission. You want to have investors that understand the risk you're taking and really support you as you do this. This is nerve-wracking. This is scary. This takes a lot to go after. And we want people that can back us. And I think that's what we really found.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me like this is the kind of thing that people want to be real. And there's an emotional element to this. I mean, you know, I want you to succeed, you know, even though I, you know, I don't know you well. If this can happen, this opens, you know, so many doors related to human activity in space. And I imagine your investors sort of share that passion and vision, as well as looking at simply the dollar and cent side of things.
I mean, let's be honest here. I want to see this succeed, right? And I'm also, me and my co-founder have done a lot of talking to other people that are thinking about taking on asteroid mining and really helping them make this happen. I want to see all of New Space succeed. Like, I think space is awesome. I want to see it's something that we can access. And I hope that we are able to expand humanity in the future. And to me, it doesn't matter who does that. What matters is that we do it. And that's the most important part.
Yeah. And what are the relevant governance mechanisms around that? I know there's sort of some UN treaties that create ambiguity around what can be done. And then there's the Artemis Accords that the US is promoting that take in a different direction. So, you know, what do you see as the governance and policy landscape, and how important is that to what you're trying to do?
So there's obviously a lot of ambiguity around this as we go forward. Now, I will say kind of our forefathers, Planetary Resources, right, did a lot of great work getting the 2015 Space Act passed. And that really kind of gave a much clearer path for us to go forward as we do that. But the reality is here is we're focused on the tech. We're focused on making that happen. And we understand that we are going to need to work closely with the U.S. government and the State Department to make sure that what we're doing is acceptable as we go forward. And we fully plan on engaging with them and doing that in due time. We don't foresee any problems here, either with the UN treaties or the Artemis Accords. Like we think everything we're doing is above board and we'll be fine. But it's also going to be on us to check and make sure that we're good stewards of this as we go forward. I think the worst thing we can do is ignore everybody, go launch one of these missions, make people very, very angry, and then get a ton of kind of regulatory bodies to jump in and determine that, you know, there needs to be a ton of regulations surrounding this in ways that maybe aren't beneficial to making this happen. So we want to be good stewards and we'll do our best to make sure that happens.
Yeah. And, you know, you alluded to something that I was planning on asking, but there are a previous generation of companies not that long ago, like Planetary Resources and Deep Space Industries, you know, staffed by very talented, smart people that did not ever manage to achieve this vision. You know, what's different now?
Yeah, so when those companies started, let's be honest, the space industry was a very, very different place than it is today. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest change that we have is our access to space is so much cheaper than there was. And the reality is if we had to go spend $500 million on a rocket, this doesn't close. I can't, you know, I don't think any investor is going to give me $500 million to go buy a rocket with some unproven technology, but I can do it now for $1 million. And that's a total game changer that they just did not have access to. On top of that, their visions were very different, right? They both envisioned very large vehicles going out mining a lot of resources. Some of them, DSI, I believe, was even bringing it back to LEO. The physics there behind that are very hard to pull off and require propulsion technologies that are not available to us now. So they just had a little bit different vision, but I think the biggest part here was the tech. And that's the biggest thing. We now have access to this where they didn't. Apart from that, like we've reached out to a lot of people at DSI and Planetary Resources. They really built some world-class teams that were going after this. And I think a lot of those teams still love the vision of asteroids, of going after and mining asteroids, and have joined us in advisor capacities to help us. And it's been great to leverage kind of that past to help us make our decisions as we go forward.
Yeah. And in thinking about the ecosystem, what are the technologies that you would like to see developed, but not by you, right? What are the things that aren't on your roadmap, but that you'd like to see come out of the ecosystem? You already alluded to Starship, radically bringing down the cost of launch. Are there other things that would help you on your path, but you hope that you don't have to be the one to do it because you can't do everything?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that mainly for us surrounds around bringing low cost, high thrust propulsion to the market, right, for smaller satellites. So I think you've had a lot of development around CubeSats mm-hmm. and what you've seen in these much smaller form factors. And you've had some big tier one defense contractors build the kind of geobirds, right, the things that are going to be a lot heavier and go out and including some of the NASA missions. But in the smaller, you know, right above in the small sat realm, you haven't had a ton of development. And so I'm really hopeful that companies, you know, like Impulse and some of these other tug companies out there are really going to change the game on that and bring us some propulsion systems that allow us to get, you know, much higher delta V and really expand our total footprint as we're looking at these asteroids. It really comes down to us a very simple equation. How much delta V do we have on the vehicle and what asteroids can we target with that? So this can really open up the space to us big time.
Do you think nuclear forms of propulsion or solar sails, what are there any particular propulsion technologies that you can imagine being on a satellite that excite you?
So I think solar sails are going to be too slow. Nuclear mm-hmm. propulsion, I would love to see. I don't think it's going to get to the scale that I needed or the mass mm-hmm. that I needed at. For our specific missions. Also, I'm not sure how favorable the government would be using a nuclear-powered engine, but I would love to think that they would allow it. So that I would say that some of these new propulsion techs, some of these new fuels coming out that we can use, some of the new engine technologies that are being developed that just aren't there yet can be hugely beneficial to us if we can pull them off. And that's what I'd love to see.
What do you see or hope will be happening in space by 2050?
By 2050, I really hope that we have gone to Mars as a humanity, that we have landed there, that we have some presence there, that we have some presence on the moon, and that we're really trying to push the envelopes of what we can do. You know, I think it's really easy in the engineering world to kind of bash James Webb for how much money and how long it took, but you've seen the images and you've seen just the inspiration and the dreams that it's caused in society for a project that, in the grand scheme of things, like didn't cost a ton of money. I hope that we can inspire people by 2050 to really spend more resources, continue to push the envelope, and continue to blend kind of the science and commercial approaches to just change the world in ways that nobody ever thought possible.
Yeah, and that sort of actually gets a little bit to the idea behind this podcast, which is, you know, in some ways, building the social momentum to do these things can often be harder than the engineering challenge. Right. How do we motivate people to spend the kind of resources that will make this possible? And so, you know, you've alluded to this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on, do you think it's worth the investment for us to become a multiplanetary species? And, you know, why do you have whichever perspective you have on that?
Absolutely. It's worth the investment to become a multiplanetary species. Do I know if it'll work long time? I think there's a lot of smarter people out there than me that are looking at this, like Mars is not a very hospitable place right now, right? It's really cold. It has huge radiation problems. I'm not even sure if we really solved the problem of even how to get to Mars. Like, deep space radiation is no joke, mm-hmm. and it's not going to be fun for whoever are the first people to get there. But I think these are all problems that I would love to see society really go solve and get behind. I think, you know, the world as a whole gets very caught up with social media and a lot of these other things out there that can get a lot of money, make people very rich very quickly, have influences with your friends. It's we need to figure out a way to parlay that into how do we actually do a scientific goal. And I think there's a lot of great people, yourself included, that are trying very much to do that. And I hope that we continue to see that momentum shift in society to make it happen. But I also hope long term, like apart from the multiplanetary as a species, I hope that we continue to send exploration vehicles out. You know, the Voyager probes, we learned a lot from, and, you know, they're going to be non-existent very soon just because they're running out. I hope we continue to do missions like that, missions where we really go for it. We send things deep, you know, missions like Starshot, right, that we'll try to visit another solar system. Things like that I want to continue to dream for and hope that people will actually fund and get behind, even if it's not always going to be a monetary making endeavor.
And I, you know, I think that sort of goes through the questions that I wanted to talk about. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the audience, either about your company, your vision for your space, or what you think it takes to be successful in undertaking this kind of endeavor?
You know, Timothy, the biggest thing I'd love to share with your audience is we're engineers, we're dreamers, and we're, you know, we're trying to pull this off in the best way and the most economical way we think we can. I would encourage anybody that's listening to this podcast to reach out to us if you have any questions, you have any advice, or you wanted to discuss anything as we go forward. We love helping out other founders, other people in the space industry, any way we can. So if anybody wants to reach out, you can reach us at founders@astroforge.io or via our website, astroforge.io. I think that there is a link on there to contact us.
Awesome. Well, I love your vision, and I hope you succeed. And, you know, as a marker, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson said the first trillionaire is going to be somebody in space mining. So, Matt, you are one of the candidates to become the world's first trillionaire. And so let me just do a quick outro. Thank you to Matt for joining the Multiplanetary Society podcast. And thanks to all of you listeners. If you like this content, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform to ensure you don't miss an episode, and leave a review to help other people find it. If you have any feedback or guest suggestions, please feel free to email us at multiplanetarysociety, all one word with no dashes, at gmail.com.